I'm Ivy.
I'm Rachel, and we are Swords and Sapphics, a podcast all about representation, queer media, women with a capital W, and a little bit of nonsense.
So start sharpening your swords, sip your tea, and join us as we obsess over the wonderful beings that are women.
Today we have an episode about the exploitation of trauma in media, especially in Hollywood. So how real life stories have been turned into a commodity in Netflix, Disney Plus. Who else has done it? A lot of people have done it. There's been a lot of stories about serial killers and historical figures and celebrities.
And generally true crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we get into the heavy stuff, what have you been reading, Ivy?
Books.
Yay. Tell me more.
I'm changing it up a bit. I'm currently still reading The Adlex Paradox by Olivia Blake. It's difficult for my brain, so I'm taking my time with it. And I started the second Killing Eve book.
Wonderful. I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm on like page 15, so I'm not that far away from you.
I might start it tonight. I love how this was supposed to be just a month buddy read, and it's now probably closer to March, and we've only just started the second book.
We're taking our time. It's okay.
Yeah.
It is what it is. What have you been reading?
Well, I started Legends and Lattes last night.
Yay!
It's very cozy. The writing is very cozy. And yeah, I'm not very far in, but it makes me want to write fantasy. I love it very much. I love Viv very much. I think all love interests and all main characters should be a gigantic arc. That's all I have to say with that.
Absolutely great.
What else? Oh, I just finished The Body by Stephen King. I read it because I love Stand By Me, and also because he tweeted that thing about how he should have the right to write about minorities as a straight white man after I bought the book. And I did not actually know how problematic he was and how problematic his content was until after I bought it. But Stand By Me is one of my favourite films. So, and it was my first Stephen King book. And it was pretty much the same as the film. I was surprised by like how closely they'd adapted it into the film version, because obviously these days a lot of adaptations have a lot of differences. So it wasn't anything new, but it was nice to like feel closer to the characters. It had a lot of slurs in it, and that's partly because it's set in the 60s and partly because he wrote it in the 80s and partly because he's a straight white man and he's stupid. So it's kind
really of... covered it up, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had to look past that. I enjoyed it. It was fine. If you're a fan of the film, you'll probably like the book. There's not much more to say about it. It wasn't any... To be fair, because he's such a hyped-up author, I was expecting more somehow. Mm-hmm. Like, his writing's great when it's not being, like, problematic. But it was... Yeah, it was just... I don't know. It's kind of crazy to be underwhelmed by one of the world's most popular best-selling authors. I don't know.
I had the same with Carrie when I read it ages ago. I was still in high school, maybe even before that. But I enjoyed the movie with Chloe,
Grace Moretz. Yeah.
Yeah, the second adaptation. And I really enjoyed it. And I mean, girls going wild. Yay.
Yeah.
So I did read the book. I do remember, as you said, it was pretty, like, as with this, it was, the adaptation was very truthful to the book. but it was fine.
Yeah, it was just fine.
Yeah.
I guess it's what you'd expect of a best-selling author, but I also guess you'd kind of expect something a little different, something a little more. Yeah. But I find I often am underwhelmed by straight white
men
authors. Yeah, by men. Yeah. Like, I honestly, like, there are very few books by men that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they don't have the same grasp of, like, emotional depth and character that I find in works by women and queer and other minorities.
And also, I feel like with, like, not straight as men, you have the attention to detail. And, like, they find the magic in the most tiniest of things.
Yeah. I think that, especially with, like, educated men, I do find that they are raised to be good at it, to be skilled. So they kind of concentrate on the skill of writing, on the craft of writing, and not really all the other elements that come into make a really good book. Like, he's very good with words, but there's something not there.
There's a feeling that sort of, you cannot get really attached to anything.
I did finish The Queen of Nothing, the third book in the Folk of the Air series. It delivered. It always does. I don't want to keep ranting about it because I've mentioned this series since we started in January. But yeah, Enemies to Lovers goodness is all I can say. Oh yeah, it had a twist I wasn't expecting. I don't think I should talk about it for anyone who's not ready yet. But the cover, if you've seen the cover,
tells everything.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. That's the whole plot.
And yet it doesn't. And yet it can't prepare you for what you witness and for what you read towards the end of the book.
Yeah, I was so excited for it to get to that part. And immediately, you had this specific gasp that told me right away on what point of the book you are. And I was like, it's happening.
It happened. It did happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what have you been watching?
Well, we finished The Sex Lives of College Girls.
We did, and we got rewarded. We got fed.
Not fed.
We've but talked about
the pickup lover.
Yeah, we've talked about this show before, and if you don't know, it does what it says on the tin. It's a group of college girls. There is a lesbian character. She came out this season and had so much acceptance from everybody. There was no homophobia, which is really, the bar is low. And yeah, it really brought me especially, so much
joy. Yeah, especially from her parents, who are this rich white people that are very clearly Republicans. And it was just, there was not a second of, like, it was just pure love and joy.
It really was. And we got a love interest because she's very popular. She's blonde. She's the cliche, except for she's a lesbian. And she kind of dated herself. So it was another character who was exactly the same. And we was like,
and just words with before the character development that sort of like went through.
Yeah. But in the end, Midori came back in all her glory.
That rhymes.
What's her name? I know. It's her Instagram handle. Her Instagram handle is Midori Glory.
Oh. Okay.
And she's called Alicia.
Alicia, right, yeah.
In the show. Yeah. And we got it. They're back, baby. And Alicia was dressed as Elton John. That was wonderful for me.
Yeah. Leto was dressed as Carol. It was okay.
Yeah. We got the reference. So there was that.
Yeah.
It was great. If you haven't watched it yet, would recommend. Probably don't acknowledge that Mindy Kaling is part of it, wrote it and stuff, because then you see all the issues with the way she writes her Asian characters, in a kind of self-insert sort of way, especially after her Velma, her adaptation of Scooby-Doo with Velma, which is just bizarre. We shan't get into that.
Yeah.
But yeah. There are two dogs in my house. Apologies.
I heard nothing.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I really love the show.
It's very good.
It's very good.
There are only 10 episodes, though, per season, so...
And it was coming out two seasons per week, two episodes per week. So in 5 weeks, the show was over after over a year of not getting anything. Like, that's insane. Yeah. Bring back 24 episodes once a week. I want to be fat regularly.
I know. I cannot pronounce the word. Well, do you know what? It's really painful as a Stranger Things fan.
Yeah.
Because we get, like... And yeah, the episodes are longer. They're not just a sitcom length, but they've only just started filming for the next season. I've lived 1,000 lives by the time the next season comes out.
Yeah.
I've wrote 1,000 fan fictions. I may as well just write the show myself.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do a good job of it, but Eddie would still be alive.
Yeah.
I can't help but think they'll kind of... prolonging it because they know that it's the main point why so many people keep their Netflix subscriptions, because especially right now with like the new policies, passwords, no password sharing and shit like that, and prices going up,
people bullied them into canceling that policy
as they fucking
very quickly watch.
But they're still,
they said, oh, this was a mistake, this shouldn't be on the website. I'm like, right,
yeah, just Netflix, man. And also there was drama this week because the Shadow and Bone poster came out and somebody accused them of copying their fan art concept, but they'd submitted it to Netflix when they had this open contest where they wanted fan art from people. There was no payment. There was a contract where the person signing it would hand over their rights to the work. So it's kind of, it's all icky. Netflix love to actually works well with what we're talking about today. Netflix loves to just profit off everything.
But this is not the first art contest that does it. Holly Black did it too when the Queen of Nothing was coming out, and I'm sure like most of art contests have the same similar terms and conditions. Yeah. So every time you enter a contest, especially if you're putting your art into it or something that you created, read through the terms and conditions, because you might lose the rights to that piece of art.
Gillian Anderson is currently doing it with a publisher. I can't think which one. I feel like possibly Macmillan or Penguin, one of those. She's like putting together a book of different stories from all different people, so they're having like an open call for that, but their work isn't paid despite the fact that it's by a big five. It's just, it's hard to believe that in this day and age, like, big companies don't offer any fucking money or any rights to artists or writers or whatever.
Is it shocking though?
Well, no, but it should be. Yeah. Unfortunately,
yeah,
that's just how it works. But have you been watching anything else?
Oh, yes, I'm watching New Girl. I'm rewatching it for hundreds of times.
Beautiful.
Loving it. Of course. And yeah.
Gave you cookie, got you cookie. We realized that me and Ivy are like the Jess and Nick of the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very much so true. I just was on the episode where they found out Winston is colorblind, and he was like, those shoes are brown. And she was like, Winston, if you think those shoes are brown, what color do you think you are?
TV gold, honestly. New Girl gave us some of the best fucking moments in TV, and I stand by that. I think constantly about the line where Nick says, "I'm not convinced I know how to read. I've just memorized a lot of words."
Yeah, I'm also like obsessed with anything Schmidt says. Really, like, yeah. In the last season, the little girl in the kindergarten was a white man broke in, and Schmidt was like, "A white man!" And what did the security do? And the girl said, "Nothing, nothing." Typical.
Amazing.
Are you the criminals from the statistics?
Are these the youths?
Honestly, we could just quote New Girl all day.
Yeah,
all day, son. Or day.
All day. My favorite is the way he pronounces chutney. Mango chutney. Oh man, now I want to watch it again.
Yeah, it's really, it has some gems of comedy.
It does. Honestly. We were talking about how like every character has some specific form of neurodivergence.
Yes.
Or mental illness, because they're just all like, it's just chaos. They mm-hmm. are chaos, and it's wonderful. I love it so fucking much.
Honestly, like the scene with Winston being colorblind, they were in the middle of a conversation, and it spiraled into conversation about colors, and it was Jess was trying to have a conversation with another guy. It was just pure chaos, and those scenes are the most brilliant to me. That's why I love Office so much, because it's mostly this chaos.
Yeah, it's great.
Phenomenal. Honestly. Phenomenal.
On that same vein, I watched a couple of episodes of Minx. Thought it was very unfortunate that this week my Pedro Pascal hyperfixation also decided to hit. So I didn't get to finish it while I have my free trial. But it was a very good start. We love Jake Johnson, but we also love
the girly. I don't know her name. Ophelia Lovey Bond.
Is that her name?
That is her magical name. I know.
Kind of a bit porn starry as well. No offense, Ophelia Lovey Bond, but I guess she fits in with Minx, because it's about the first male porn magazine for females. Does that make sense? It's got dicks in it.
Yeah.
All the porn magazines.
It has a lot of penises.
Titties, and this one has dicks. It's for female pleasure. Back in the 70s, I feel.
Let me check. It might be. Yeah, in 1970s, Los Angeles. Yeah.
So that was good. It was good. I wish I could have gotten more. It's great, because actually she comes from a privilege of like money. She comes from a wealthy mm-hmm. background, a middle class background. And that's acknowledged. Like, though she has is oppressed as a woman, and she's very feminist. She's very white feminist. And it is kind of commented on and acknowledged, like, because she goes to the country club and tries to use that to her advantage to get the magazine running. But there's also,
and
like,
also,
I was just going to say, there's also like a black woman and
like,
the class characters as well.
Jake's assistant is a black woman, and if I remember correctly, she's the one like several times to point out her privilege, and
yeah it was great. Actually, I do want to watch more, but can't afford it right now.
Yeah, I can download it for you.
Yeah, but right now just need to be with Pedro.
Yeah, but I want you to finish this.
And you said that there's a sapphic couple, so
there is a sapphic couple.
It might
and
be
it
a
just,
great watch.
It's so joyful and so cute and soft and unexpected.
I'm ready. I'm very excited.
There's a thing, like, it's 1970s, and still you have black characters. You have a gay black photographer. You have a sapphic couple. And it's just, except, like, the society is the one that doesn't allow it, and it's acknowledged, yet the people are absolutely fine with it. There's not like one comment against it.
Yeah.
And it's just so good.
Yeah, it's I guess so good. That kind of does like show a different side to like sex work and how they kind of have a more open environment to be, a more open and accepting environment to be who they kind of want to be.
Mm-hmm.
As problematic as it can be, it can also be a blessing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of penises, so look away if you don't want to see genitals.
I did not expect it when I watched it. It was a jump scare because there is a whole montage of penises.
I know.
And if you don't expect it, I didn't know. It's so freaky.
I didn't know there could be so many types of penis. Like, I'm very sheltered. I'm a Virgo and also a virgin. Not that anybody needs to know that, but I've never seen so many penises, and I saw a lot of penises, and they were all very unique.
At least you've been warned, because I had to warn her. It freaked me out. It caused me some harm to my brain.
Yeah,
it came out of nowhere, and that's what she said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. It's something. Yeah,
it was something. Yeah, but it was. It's very good. I'm very excited for it for more. I definitely think it's worth the watch. It's something good. I feel like something different. Mm-hmm. Something good.
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely. And then with my Paramount trial, I also watched the Lost City. Is it called that?
Yeah.
It's an adventure romance with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum, and it's fucking everything. If you love Romance in the Stone, you will love this one. It's so funny. Probably everybody's already watched it. I'm very behind on the trend. I don't go to cinemas, so because of anxiety reasons. So
I went to a cinema. How did I forget about it?
You did go to the cinema.
I did. Ant-Man came out last week.
It did.
It was so good. It was so good. It was so fucking good. The mid-credit scene, the post-credit scene, holy fuck, Kang will be something. I'm so excited. I'm so ready. I'm really hyped up. My first reaction was 0.0 stars.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, due to the fact that it was not promised, there was nothing to suggest that she would be there, I thought, okay, valid. 10 out of 10 then. It was really good.
It was really good. Great. Amazing. And then, of course, the moment you've all been waiting for. I watched The Last of Us. I've been watching it. I'm two episodes in. It happened. It was slowly and then all at once with this one. I really wanted the game first before the TV show even came out. But I have no room or no money for a PlayStation. And then I was like, I'm going to put it off for a while because it's going to make me want stuff and I can't afford to want stuff. But then I saw gifs of a grey bearded Joel Miller and Pedro Pascal. And I read fan fiction on Tumblr. And unfortunately, the hyperfixation was summoned. And I had to watch the first episode. And it was really fucking good.
I will explain why I'm extremely upset by this. Before Christmas, I was really close to buying PlayStation. I don't know. It happened because of Call of Duty and because my hyperfixation of Ghost. I was so close, in fact, that I went into the store and stared at it. And was like, I cannot do it. It's so expensive. And then I managed to go away. It did happen. I won the game before I watched the show. And I'm holding on by a bare fucking thread. And then Girlie starts watching it. And being obsessed by it. And then yesterday I went into a tram that had stickers of PlayStation 5 across the whole thing. And I'm like, I can't do this. I can't go back. I don't have any money. I can't buy PlayStation fucking 5 and a bunch of games.
I can be responsible for this.
Well, you are.
if we date it back, I was the first one to want a PlayStation for this exact reason. And then Ghost came along and I was like, I want it for Last of Us. And he was like, I want it for COD. And now look.
I wanted it for a lot of reasons, Spider-Man mostly, because these games, and this will piss me off, they're done by a game developer that has, like, basically sells license for the game only to PlayStation. So there's no way for the games to be on Nintendo. There's, like, very teeny tiny chance of ever being so. And I didn't know that when I bought Nintendo, like, all those years ago. And I was picking up between Nintendo and PlayStation 5, and I am happy with my choice, but I would also like to be a little more rich so I could buy both. And especially new TV, because sometimes girly turns itself off and on for no reason, especially when we play Fortnite. Yeah. And usually when we're about to fight someone, which is really neat. But it's really difficult. It's difficult existence.
But the thing is, like, whereas you need to hold it off, I need to be fed somehow, so I can't get the game. I have to watch a TV show. I can't help this. I'm afraid. I'm putting my foot down these days. She doesn't like it when I bend the spines of my books. I've said no. I'm leaving my mark on the world the best way I know how, and that's to accidentally leave creases in my books. And if you can't live with that, then you're going to have to find someone else to read with at night.
At least don't show me. Don't torture me with it.
It's not my fault. You complain when my camera is directed at the ceiling, so you can't have it both ways, girly. I opened Legends on Lattes last night, and it was a hardback, and she thought I was bending the spine because she forgot it was a hardback. And I was like, I can't live like this anymore. I have severe anxiety and people-pleasing tendencies, and also feel guilty about literally everything. You can't inflict this on me. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. I have issues. It's been clear.
We need to go to a relationship therapist at this point.
Yeah, I feel
a normal
we should
therapist.
Start with a therapist, I think. And we can progress there for sure. Yeah. Look, at least the guns on Fortnite are no longer an issue.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, new augments in Fortnite now. And you can get these good guns. And we fought over them for a very long time because it just depended on luck, really, if you could get them or not. And one day Ivy would get them like 3 or 4 times. And then another day I would get them 3 or 4 times. And then I'd die and Ivy would get to use them and I wouldn't get to use them. And it was just a whole thing.
Yeah, it really was.
So anyway, there's the rundown of our lives.
Yeah, it's really interesting. This has been a therapy session, really.
I do need to talk about this. In The Last of Us, it comes from a fungal disease, the zombie apocalypse. And I told Julie, my conspiracy theorist auntie, this morning about it. And she said that, like, scientists are saying, because, I don't know, apparently we're pushing to eat bugs these days. I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. But she said the scientists are saying that, like, bugs and mushrooms carry stuff that, and you shouldn't be eating them that often. And I'm like, I fucking love mushrooms and I don't want to turn into a clicker. I don't want to turn it. I'm not ready to live in The Last of Us. Let me tell you now, I would be the first to die. I have no will to live as it is. If I was in an apocalypse, I would be gone. I would be dead.
Yeah. Also, can you imagine if there would be, like, 3 women left on Earth? I would go and kill myself right away. You don't want to be the last remaining woman on Earth?
No. I don't even want to be the first remaining woman on Earth. No. I already don't want to remain here.
No. I don't, honestly, like, I'm scared of everything. So, I'm already living in a just constant state of stress. And living in an apocalypse is not...
Honestly, apocalypse movies just get my heart racing in a completely different way, because I get anxiety about mundane things like getting on a train, and these people are living in an apocalypse, and it's so, like, I just, they're my biggest fear. Zombies have always been my biggest fear. I don't know what it is. It's the way that you can be infected. I don't want to be one. But yeah, just in general, movies where you have to fight to survive, just, I can't relate. I'm sorry.
No. No,
however,
I'm enjoying that, but that's all about it.
I enjoy watching other people fight to survive, but I simply would not do it.
Like, good for them.
Yeah, good for you. Couldn't be me.
Couldn't be me. Should we get into our episode today?
Let's do it. Okay, so I watched Pam and Tommy. And then after that came out the biopic about Marilyn Monroe with Ana de Armas.
No, hold up. It's not a biopic. It's a movie based on a book. It's about a fictional book with Marilyn Monroe as the main character. Nothing about any of it is remotely based on a fact. Okay. It's just using real people to create a fictional story.
That's even worse. Now I'm even angrier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was also, of course, Jeffrey Dahmer, which was on Netflix again, which, of course, is about the serial killer. There's also a lot of shit about Ted Bundy out there. And so we just thought, I'm sure there's more. There's probably a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
We thought that we would talk today about why it's such a fucking issue.
We did talk about how Apple TV does it, because they did some shows based on real events, including a serial killer. The big difference, like the enormous difference, that is clear that with Apple TV specifically, they created the shows like Blackbird or 5 Days at Memorial Hospital. The big difference is that they do it to show what happened, like, and Netflix does it for the entertainment and money, nothing else. Especially, it reached a whole new level with Dahmer or whatever you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Especially because the families of the victims are still alive. They did not consent to it. When the production tried to contact them, they declined any comment, anything. How did that not give you an idea how bad of an idea what you're doing is, and how inhumane, and it's just so fucked up.
And also the way that they cast very admired figures, like Evan Peters is everybody's white boy of the month very often. I mean, not so much now as before when American Horror Story was a thing. But like,
especially because he played a fucked up toxic character.
Yeah, and everybody fucking loved him as that character, despite the fact he was a rapist in that show.
Oh, what?
He raped what's she called? Violet's mom in American Horror Story, the first season. And she ended up pregnant with his ghost baby or something. Like, it was something fucked up like that. Because she thought that she was fucking her husband, I feel, but it was him. He's known to play those characters, and he's great at it. Like, he's great, and it's a completely different thing when it's fictional. Like, yeah, rape is always not right, but like, there's a difference between enjoying the work of an actor playing a fictional killer and rapist and enjoying the glorification and like the fact that they hired a very respected, admired man to play a serial killer, knowing that people would romanticize him and adore him in that role as that man.
Especially when the Ted Bundy tapes came out, also on Netflix.
Yes.
People were obsessed with him.
Yeah, there was fan accounts on Twitter for Ted Bundy. And of course, they also hired Zac Efron. And at the time, I was like, I do get it. Like, because the thing about Ted Bundy that everyone says was that he was attractive, and that, like, because of that reason, nobody pegged him as what he was, a serial killer and a rapist. But those victims are still walking. Like, there are women out there to this day that, like, had an encounter with him, I think, I'm sure. And families who were affected by that. And so it's like, if they're not given their consent, and you know that you're casting someone who is, like, considered a heartthrob, who will be loved in any role, probably don't do it as a fucking serial killer, where you know that people are gonna then idolize him.
What really also upset me was that on TikTok, people started using the memes from the show and sounds, like when he was standing in front of the TV and, like, forcing someone to watch it. I haven't seen it. I'm not really sure what it's about. So, like, he's just standing there forcing someone to watch the TV next to him. And then the sound, something along the lines, "Stay still, let me take pictures."
Gross.
Yeah. And people are using it as a sound, like, to make jokes and shit. Like,
there's just massive desensitization. And anytime that a true crime story becomes a glossy Hollywood, Netflix, blockbuster, whatever, and that really does even put more distance between reality and fiction. And it's just like, there's not really any words, but it's just weird.
Yeah, and then the true crime Twitter account tweeted something like, "What's your favorite, like, ethnicity of victim?" And there was a poll, and you, like, clicked if it's, like, white or what. Yeah.
Well, the thing about Jeffrey Dahmer is that he targeted queer men.
Queer black men.
Queer black men, was it?
Yeah.
Like, his victims were that they were all queer black men. All queer men, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, like, so that makes it even... That's the thing, like, victims are often minorities to begin with, like, either women, like, in most cases, women, or, like, the minorities that are being targeted because of their demographic, like, and that's what makes it even more fucked up. Mm-hmm. You never get shows where a white man dies, like... Where sadly, the tragedy is, like, the white man died, because that doesn't happen. The white man is almost always the assaulter, the abuser, the killer. It's fucked up.
The thing is, I do believe that we should know about, like, these stuff. We should talk about them, but in the sense, like, very different. The conversation, the theme of it has to change somehow. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. I'm gonna talk about Apple TV and Blackbird. We talked about it several times. How they did it, they never showed a dead body. They never showed blood or gory. They made you fear from the way they did it, like, from the music and the long just sequences of someone walking and the acting that made you realize how terrifying it actually was to the victims, and how it, if you don't know that killing people is a terrifying bad thing.
And there was moments where the killer was, like, framed as likable, because that was true to their personality, their story, which is a completely different thing than just completely romanticizing it. Like, you always knew that this thing was bad. Young girls were being killed. Like, they didn't have to show the bodies to prove that it was bad. And they also told it through the perspective of a different character, not through the serial killer. So he wasn't centered. It wasn't told through his eyes. Like, you didn't come particularly, like, sympathize with him. Like, you had moments where you're like, oh, because let's be honest, like, serial killers are still people, which it sounds really awful, but like they still have the complexities of a human brain. They still have like, they still love things. They still like have a personality, and it's okay show that.
One could argue they're even more complex than people that don't kill. And especially, of course, there must be something about them that draws people in and gives them their trust. That's why they're so successful at doing what they did.
Yeah. But there's just...
And it's a dangerous thing. And I feel like all this obsession with them kind of proves the point of, like, people are really gullible, and if they would meet them, they would die.
And that's the thing, like, especially with attractive white men. Mm-hmm. But do you think that Blackbird was more successful because the killer wasn't, like, conventionally attractive by society's standards? I don't know. Like,
oh,
I
do. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
It might be it, but I feel it might be because he wasn't, like, traditionally attractive, but they did also played with him being so, like, childlike, and he looked innocent because he didn't really react as an adult.
Yeah.
And I also believe it was because the show didn't reach the people that Netflix reaches. The whole target group was different.
I wonder if there were any, like, survivors or, you know, families of the victims who watched Blackbird and who were, like, whether it had the same kind of reaction, because obviously the victims of and the families of Jeffrey Dahmer, they didn't want it made. They fought against it the whole way. It's interesting because, like, it's not even clear where the boundary lies. But there was, like, a whole episode from the victim's point of view. Like, we didn't know her as a character. We didn't know where she was coming from, but it was just kind of to humanize the victims instead of just letting them be victims and let the serial killer get all the glory. Like, we got a whole episode where we found out she was a sister and she made mistakes and she was flawed, but she was also just a kid and that kind of stuff, which was had a huge impact as well. And how her story was about the murder.
It was about her.
Her life.
As a human being. Yeah, the family of some victims are still alive, and someone commented on it. And there was a big difference with the show is that the survivors were also parents of little girls. So, like, I guess it hits very different than if it's your parent that dies. It's not like one is worse and stuff, but yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting. It's also hard to know, like, what's right and wrong when you've not been through that firsthand anyways. And I think that Blackbird was also more of, like, Jimmy's story, the guy who kind of got the confession for him and was able to make sure that this guy never killed again or he's dead.
I think that's why it was also so powerful, because he was so very clearly suffering that he had to sit through there and was pretending to be his friend. So it was because it was, like, from his POV and not the killer's, like, you could see the shock and the how much of it toll it took on him to listen to all the confession.
Yeah, it wasn't just about, like, sensationalizing the murders or letting people kind of give into that weird, like, dark side that we all have. Like, we're all a bit obsessed with the murderers. Not obsessed, but, like, we're intrigued.
Because it's such a fascinating thing. Like, what drives one to do that?
Mm. And like, that was what that story was more about. Because it, yes. It did give us his backstory, like how he grew up and like what violence and experiences might have led to him becoming the way he was. But it also wasn't just about that. It wasn't about giving him excuses. It was just about telling the story in a very authentic way, like, and feeling the emotions that you feel through it instead of trying to push on this obsession, like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just, it was just done the right way, as far as I can tell, as someone who's never been part of, like, kind of, you know, that violence.
Yeah. And then we have, of course, Pam and Tommy. Which, if you don't know, I didn't before the show even came out. Like, their sex tape was leaked.
Yeah, Pamela Anderson and Tommy from Motley Crue.
Yeah. And before the show started the production, when they, like, started casting people and writing the script, Pamela Anderson, like, very clearly said she did not consent to the show. She did not talk to anyone about it.
Yeah.
Etc. Etc. Tommy, on the other hand, was involved somehow, I believe, because I know Sebastian Stan was on grabbing lunch with him and stuff.
Yeah. Which, like, Tommy, in the last episode, Tommy became abusive towards Pamela. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's kind of like, hey, sorry, you're suffering over there, girly, but I'm a white man and I can survive anything. Like, I won't get punished for this. All is good with me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that was the whole, it's bizarre because that was the whole theme of the show. The way that Pamela was persecuted for being in the sex tape, Tommy was like considered cool for it. The way that her privacy was leaked and she had to fight to get it back. And yet the real Pamela Anderson did not get that. She did not get that privacy. She
twice
the respect. Twice, because this show was made about her, so people got to see her, like, her suffering, and again, like, it, and that was just crazy. Like, it was like they were trying to spread the message against, like, exploiting people and respecting privacy in the same
while doing the same.
Yeah, this is just wild.
I feel like we though also have to hold a little accountable the people involved, because big actors like, what's his name that played Dahmer?
Evan Peters, yeah.
Yeah, Sebastian Stan, Lily...
James.
What's her name? Yeah. They're big names. They're big actors. They don't need this job.
No.
So, and the fact that they agree to it, knowing what it can do and what damage it can cause. And the same with Ana de Armas with Blonde.
God, yeah.
Same case. Like, if that's just... That's so fucked up. That's just not okay. And especially, I feel it's especially got so bad because of them, because they were such a big people.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they choose the people they know will get the most revenue, as though it's any other movie.
Yeah,
because that's, and at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's just about making money. So they get the biggest names. But can you imagine, like, as an actress, knowing that Pamela Anderson did not consent to that and then just putting on her fake boobs and doing it anyways? Like,
especially when you're, like, going on about how feminist and pro-consent you are and then you do this shit.
Yeah.
And that was the same with Amsterdam, by the way. What? Oh, it's not quite different, but the director was like, he said on his own that he assaulted his back then 19-year-old trans niece. He was abusive on set. There are videos of it. People mentioned it several times, and yet you have Margot Robbie, who was big during Me Too and Time's Up, and Taylor Swift, your feminist icon, in the fucking movie. Not to talk even about the men, who no one really talked about because they're just as flawed as every other woman.
Yeah.
But there's just a little bit more of irony.
Oh, yeah.
Of the fact that they're very outspoken about feminism and protecting victims and women who were assaulted and somehow.
Yeah.
And they can't work with the assaulter. Are you fucking kidding me?
Mm-hmm. And that's what privilege does. And wealth kind of takes away a lot of the time, from what would usually be considered a minority, because, yeah, they're women, but they're white mm-hmm. women. They're wealthy mm-hmm. women. And they're very high status women, so they can do whatever they want. Like, they won't lose money from that at this point, because so many of the public don't involve themselves with bigger issues. They just want to watch stuff for entertainment, which is valid. Like, it's a fucked up world. We just want to watch good stuff, and like, we do consume stuff that we know is problematic sometimes, just because you can, like, watch stuff while being aware that it's fucked up. Like, you can enjoy stuff while being aware that this is wrong. Like, you're allowed to do that. But there's, mm-hmm. as a person of high status with a big platform, like, why wouldn't you want to spread the right message? Like, why would you want to support the wrong people and the wrong stories?
Also, why wouldn't you want to be part of the change? It's always in my brain. Like, if you get the status, if you get the name and the money and the big word, like, why wouldn't you be the first one to change things to the better? At least just, you know, it just, even from like the egoistical point of view, like, you would be the one people would remember for doing good things. Why wouldn't you want to do that?
Because it's so
That's
much
the same with billionaires. Like, they could like fix climate change.
Yeah.
And could be, their names could be in history books for good things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they decided to be on the bad side. Like, just from that, like, again, egoistical point of view, why wouldn't you want to do that?
I know. It's crazy. It is. It, when you have the power and the energy and the money to make differences, like, I don't really get why you wouldn't, but I guess mm-hmm. they just get very comfortable in their wealth and
mm-hmm.
their security. And yeah,
that's the same with Natalie Portman. Like, I believe she has her own production company, and yet her big stance was to wear dress with the name of female directors on it.
Mm.
Like, you could be the one hiring female directors.
Yeah, and you never see them at activist riots or protests or demonstrations. You never see them like out in the world actually doing shit. Like, they'll make the speech at the Oscars when they win their award about how great it is as a woman to be making history or whatever, but they won't actually engage in anything that doesn't concern them.
And in the same breath, like, goes on the stage and says something nice about Brad Pitt that says down there right after it came out, like, that was abusive, not only to his wife, but also his kids, in public.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
It's just wild. It is I hate celebrity culture, and I hate mm-hmm. that, like, we're all so tethered to it. Like, you can't get away from it.
Yeah. Like,
it's just, and then every time you think you found someone who maybe is fine,
mm-hmm.
they do something shit. And like, yeah, they're people. They're allowed to make mistakes, but they don't own it, and they don't try to do better. That's the problem.
What's his name? The guy that plays Shazam, and he played Chuck in the show? Chuck?
Oh, I don't know what his name is.
Someone Levy? Wait.
Sean?
No, that's the director.
Yeah, there's too many Levies.
Zachary Levy.
Right.
Levy, however you pronounce it. He, you know what? I thought he voiced Eugene in a Tangle.
Oh.
Too. And you think, like, he's such a goofball, he's cute, he's really fine.
Yeah.
And then he goes on a podcast with the Republican, or who he was, I don't know, and like, big Trump supporter, and he talks about, like, basically outs himself as anti-vax and a big-ass TERF. Like, what the fuck? Right before his next big movie is coming out, by the way. That's one way to promote it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. That's the thing, like, they're just they're not tethered to reality, and a lot of people aren't, like, the viewers included, the people who subscribe to the culture and ignore all the bad shit about it. Like, they'd just rather just sit and be complacent, and that's fine, like, whatever. But when is it going to change if nobody's willing to change? That's a problem. And that's and that, at the end of the day, the people who are hurt by it are the victims, if we're talking about true crime stuff. And minorities, mostly, again, like, it's always women or queer people or Black people, they bear the brunt of it in the end. And I guess that's why nothing changes, because if it was white men, if the message was spread as with white men as victims, something would change.
Yeah, there's this thing, like, the first contraception for men is 100% effective. They just tested it, and the first questions in the comment from men was like, oh, what's the side effects? Have you ever seen all the side effects for female contraception pill?
Yes, I saw.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah, I've had an ovarian cyst from, like, contraception, and I only use it for periods. Like, so you can't even. It's just impossible to be a woman or have a uterus. But that's the thing. Like, if men, if cis men were the ones suffering, then things would be completely different.
And yeah, we can see that changing just as we speak.
Yeah,
ridiculous. And also, someone in the comments says, some woman said, do you really believe men would remember taking a pill daily? And I'm like,
yeah,
the bar is below
it
the
is
fucking ground.
It really fucking is. It's exhausting. It really is.
Yeah.
Another thing about Pam and Tommy is that the tagline is the greatest love story in history or something like that. Which is just the fucking bizarre. They're not together now. That he was abusive towards her. He, on several occasions, did not sympathize with the fact that she was the one suffering from the sex tape being leaked. Like, just fucking, it's just fucking wild. It's just, and again, like, Sebastian Stan. I love Sebastian Stan. I was not complaining that he had a fucking nose ring in and was dressed as a punk rocker, but because of that, like, he. It makes the character and the real person get away with so much more. Because they choose attractive people who people enjoy.
Yeah.
It's just
the same with, like, let's talk about Marilyn Monroe for a bit. Because we've seen she is, during her life, she was treated as a commodity. After her death, nothing changed.
Nope.
Years and years and years and later. And we saw it with Kim fucking Kardashian wearing her dress.
Yeah.
Just using it as a prop. While it was, and it just, her, Marilyn's name is still used as a prop. And it's disgusting. And then you have a movie, again, that has nothing to do with the real life Marilyn fucking Monroe. And it was turned into some rightist propaganda for anti-abortion, where the her fetus was talking to her as a baby. What the fuck? It was insane.
Often, like, when she was pregnant, she was either, like, she struggled with fertility, I'm sure I've read. And also, like, she was sexually abused quite often. Like, it's just, so to be anti-abortion in that instance, of all instances,
yeah,
is even more fucked up than it would be usually.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that that's considered cinema when it was a fucking fetus, an image of a fetus talking. Fetuses don't talk. Fetuses do not talk. I promise that fetus is not talking to you.
It's literally just cells. That it's nothing. God.
And it's just, it is just, it's sad at the end of the day. Like, it's sad that that's, that, like, Hollywood and big name companies get to reframe people's lives, get to tell it the way they want to tell it for money and profit off their trauma, like, their suffering. It's just sad. It makes me sad.
It makes me enraged.
Worse when they're not here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
Like, she's dead. She's not, she can't, she never got a say in that. And that's now her story. Like,
especially when that was her life. Again, like, Jesus. Yeah.
The thing is, there are so many good fiction books out there that they could adapt.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many good fictional stories that people are writing and putting in the world that they could make into really good movies, but they don't waste their time or their money on things that isn't guaranteed to sell, whether it's problematic or not.
You either do the movies for art or profit. And if you do it for the profit, then you're not really a filmmaker. Like, if you do it without morality and empathy and just staying true to your audience and just bringing something good to the society, it doesn't have to be some, like, another portrait of the Lady on Fire. Like, the thing of, if you bring in entertainment, do it responsibly.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. It should not be that difficult. This should not be a conversation that we have.
Distinguish when you're supposed to be making something for the basis of entertainment and when you're supposed to be doing it to, like, shed awareness or like, tell an authentic story. Don't merge the two together when it suits you because you want the money, like, especially when it comes to real life stories, like, it's just, it's frustrating to see.
It is. I'm a little worried. I'm excited, but I'm a little worried about Love and Death on HBO Max because my girly Lizzie Olsen is playing Candy Montgomery, and it's, again, about a real life crime that happened. She was a killer. I'm not sure if serial killer. It was also done recently as a movie with Jessica Biel. I have not watched it. So I'm a little worried how that's gonna turn out.
I didn't know it was based on real life.
Yeah.
I just saw Elizabeth Olsen seducing a very clear Republican who could be friends with Donald Trump, and
it's in Texas.
Get her out of there. Get her out of there, guys. She deserves better than that. It doesn't look like the one for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah,
it's not good. And when, especially, like, we can't ignore, there are some good adaptations out there for fictional stories. Like, we have been so fed with Shadow and Bone at the minute. And, like, I don't know, I never played the game, but I can only assume fans of The Last of Us are really happy because the storytelling, the way that they are taking time in the episodes, is wonderful. Like, so it can be done. So why can't it be done instead of doing harm? Like, why can't we just why?
Yeah, this really is a subject for a conversation that lasts hours and hours and hours.
It really is.
Talk about it forever. It's really,
And we're not saying it, like, stuff inspired by real events should never be made. Like, there are a lot of good stuff out there, and it's always going to be the case. If someone has an interesting story, people are going to take that and roll with it. But it's just a matter of respecting the people who were victims.
No, actually, yeah, exactly. As I said, like, I believe we should be aware of our history, no matter how big or small it can be. And we should talk about bad people and good people, but responsibly and without bringing more harm to already harmed people.
Yeah.
It should not be that difficult.
Yeah. I will hold my hands up and say I do love watching unsolved mysteries. I don't know. Like, people do love true crime. Like, I wrote a book about crime podcasters. Like, but yeah, I don't know. Like, there's just a way of doing it. There is. I watched Pam and Tommy and I enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. Like, I did. But I also knew that it was very wrong the way that they were treating Pamela Anderson in the process by completely ignoring her boundaries and not respecting her as a woman while trying mm-hmm. to do that in the show. Like, there's mm-hmm. just, you're not a bad person for consuming harmful media or whatever. It's just acknowledging that.
And also, depending on how you react after.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. So don't make fan accounts of Ted Bundy, you fucking weirdos. Go to therapy, babes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the worst thing also, like, Netflix, the Dahmer, it was just one season of like a whole real life monsters type of thing. So
right,
yeah. There's going to be another about a different serial killer.
Yeah. Oh.
They're building upon it. Like, it's just.
And they're going to be men. You know what? I'm going to say it. If it was women, I'd be fine with it. If it was women killing men, you know. But the thing is, as women, our whole entire life has been fed with stories about violence against women, violence against minorities mm-hmm. from men. We're tired of that mm-hmm. now, especially as women and especially as queer mm-hmm. people.
One could argue that, like, and Eve Pilastri was, like, she knew. Like, women who go and murder is even more, like, interesting. And just, like, from the psychology point of view, it is fascinating what drives a person to do that. What drives a woman to do that? Especially, like, in the Katie Montgomery, she's a mother, she's a wife. So, like, if you created a life, what makes you take one away?
Yeah,
like, just that. It's a fascinating question that, from the psychological point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that, rightly so, a lot of people are interested in, because at the end of the day, we're all just human, and we're like, mm-hmm. why are you capable of that, and I'm not. Like, what difference is there between us?
Yeah.
But again, you can be respectful about it. That's literally the bare minimum if you're telling stories of real victims who still live now. It's really, really quite easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just expecting from Netflix a movie from a Russian soldier and Ukrainian soldier.
Oh, God.
I'm telling you, it's coming. We already got several COVID movies, so, like,
yeah, there's currently a show with David Tennant about the man who was targeted in the Salisbury poisonings. You know, the Russian. He was targeted by the Russian agent, with one of those poisoning things. I can't remember what it's called, but he has a shitty Russian accent.
Bell.
Yeah. The fucking Russian accent is one thing that always gets me, because I'm sure not all Russians talk the same way. Like, it's a really
not
big...
Not all Europeans talk with Russian accent.
They don't.
I was listening to an audiobook that girly wrote about Czech people, and they all had very strong Russian accent. We do hear me talk with a Russian accent.
No.
If I was talking with more pronounced Czech accent, it would be completely different from a Russian accent.
Yeah, imagine that. But that's another matter for another day.
Another discussion. I can go on a long, long, long rant about that.
Mm. Yeah.
Well,
next week we will be
next
talking
week
about killing e-books.
Killing e-books, yes. Yeah.
Well, presuming that we read enough, but yeah.
Yeah, I have faith in us.
I do too. Yes, so that's a thing. Make sure to check our website for lots of new releases, new articles, new guest pieces. Nothing new to report, I feel.
No.
We have a Discord chat, if you didn't know already. I need to post a link somewhere. I don't feel like I did yet.
Yeah, it's still not on the website. We talked about during Christmas.
At one point, we will put the link up, but we've tweeted about it somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. And you can text us, we can send it to you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So remember,
support women's rights.
But most importantly, support women's wrongs. Unless they're being obsessed with real-life serial killers.
Yeah. Or starring in a pro-life propaganda.
Or starring in a show about consent while being in a show that is consented by the victim. And see you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile. Thank you for listening to Swords and Sapphics. You can enjoy a new episode every Wednesday.
While waiting, you can visit our website, swordsandsapphics.com, and find lots of articles, interviews, and guest pieces.
Feel free to contact us with any requests, questions, or inquiries through a form on our website or directly to our email, swordsandsapphicspodcast@gmail.com.